politicians, the people's enemy for centuries. By Godfrey Bloom. Most problems that blight the lives of ordinary folk are caused by politicians. In a democracy, one might suggest this is counterintuitive, but democracy has mutated since its Athenian concept so drastically it has driven a wedge between politicians and those who elect them. The original concept of democracy was that those citizens enfranchised had a direct stake in the country. Our American cousins call it skin in the game. This concept has long been abandoned by a much misapplauded development of universal suffrage. In Britain, you get a vote at 18 years of age, regardless of your financial contribution to society. This inevitably leads to a deep-rooted system of political bribery to those voters at the expense of their neighbors. Let me give an example with property tax at local government level. Only householders pay property tax, sometimes in England referred to as rates or council tax. On average, therefore, there are 4 people to 1 actual payer of the tax. Corporate property taxpayers have no vote at all. Let us look at a shopkeeper with a thriving business who has a nice house in the vicinity. He might pay £15,000 par for his shop and a further £3,000 par for his house. He contributes £18 par to the town hall. His neighbor has a wife and 2 adult children. They are on social welfare. That is 4 voters who contribute nothing, the useless eaters of whom Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum despairs. Although one might concur families that live from decade to decade on welfare are so described, so we would conclude our diversity officers in hospitals and climate consultants at the town hall. But welfareism defeats Darwinism, so there is no natural cull, no survival of the fittest. Election time arrives and the Red Party proposes an Olympic-size swimming pool for the borough. Very popular with the majority of voters because to them it is free. Imagine a night in the pub with only 1 chap in 4 contributing to the whip. The exponential growth in the public sector is unstoppable. In Leeds there are, I gather, 30,000 public sector employees on guaranteed salaries, usually unsackable, enjoying index-linked pensions, unaffordable in the private sector. Any party suggesting reform of the public sector loses 30,000 votes before the campaign starts. Out-of-control state spending is therefore built into the system, encouraged by state broadcasting, a major recipient of taxpayer largesse. Salaries at the top of public institutions are eye-watering. Hence the £3 trillion national debt. Far too few people have skin in the game. The original Athenian concept is permanently thwarted. The British National Health Service employs 1.2 million people, devouring £130 billion each year. Yet only half of these employees have any medical qualifications. It is not fit for purpose, but reform is impossible. It is a national icon, but threat of serious reform would wipe a million votes off any part that advocated it, so it stumbles on. In America, the military are accorded the same iconic status, $1 trillion a year for a monster military regime protecting a country in absolutely no danger of invasion. The money is, of course, borrowed. The poison in the modern political body is the ludicrous adherence to the political party system. In America and Great Britain, you vote red or blue. Most democratic countries are the same, perhaps with marginally more options. They might get red, blue, and green. The point being, any retarded egomaniacal sociopath wearing the right rosette can get elected, as indeed they do. The end result is not democracy but rule by an elite cartel. Naturally, it means you never meet anyone in the pub who thinks the government is any good, regardless whether it is red or blue or green with pink and blue spots, the current Johnson government. The electorate has to vote, if they vote at all, for the least dishonest, stupid or insane candidate, increasingly difficult. This phenomenon plagues every generation. My grandfather served with the Royal Horse Artillery in the Great War. He was badly injured, albeit not totally incapacitated, on the Messines Ridge in 1917. He was dragged into a futile and pointless conflagration at 18 by weak-minded politicians, which cost the lives of 3 million young men of the British Empire, A further 3 million mutilated, worse the cream of the country's youth. He came back to suffer from a depression caused by idiot politicians globally with no understanding of economics or geopolitical strategy. The whole thing kicked off again in 1939. My father was an RAF pilot, my mother a WAF. In 1945, a bunch of totally freak politicians under Clement Attlee made such a dog's breakfast of the economy. Germany and Japan, who were supposed to have lost the war, overtook us in 2 decades. This culling of the nation's best young people has reduced the country's IQ, a mainly inherited phenomenon over the past 100 years. Wars reduce individual freedoms, increase the power of the state, and dumb down the nation. In my own humble way, I battled for the United Kingdom's freedom on 2 fronts. The first as a Cold War Army logistics officer with 4th Armored Division in Germany and occasional appointments with specialist forces. The geopolitical threat then being the Soviet Union, incidentally long gone, somebody tell the US military-industrial, congressional complex. The second a 25-year Brexit battle to return self-government to Great Britain, re-establish our links with our true friends in the Commonwealth and promote global free trade. Britain and its allies won the Cold War and secured a rather watered-down Brexit. Yet these modest triumphs are already being squandered by incompetence and intellectual corruption on an epic scale. However, I am beginning to understand my grandfather and father's sense of political betrayal. The last 14 months has astonished me. Ponder, if you will, the government's response to a virus no more severe than that of 1957-8 and 1968. With a recovery rate amongst the healthy under 75s of over 98%. No child deaths and very few under 65, see Office of National Statistics. Yet the imposition of martial law, limitless police powers, the abandonment of the genuinely sick by the fearfully expensive NHS, suspension of parliamentary government, a coach and horses driven through the principles of English law and the 1688-9 Bill of Rights. A supine mainstream media never challenging faux state scientists, of whom Eisenhower warned us in 1960 in his retirement speech. For 2 decades now, all mathematical projections issued from academia via state-sponsored scientists have been wrong. Neil Ferguson, Imperial College London, is surely the patron saint of statistical humbuggery, always wrong yet never off our screens. The Americans have Dr. Anthony Fauci. The betrayal now matches that of post-Great War Versailles and 1945 British khaki socialism. Censorship now matches anything in our recent history, on MSM or social media. Free speech has virtually disappeared. Weird new laws based on subjective analyses incomprehensible to a modern jury condemn Magna Carta, the 1688 Bill of Rights and Toleration Acts to the tomb. Habeas corpus is suspended for those who challenge the status quo, the current appalling example being Julian Assange. The dumbing down of the educational system and the catalyst of sophisticated propaganda has coerced a gullible cowed nation to supine compliance, culminating in a proposed ID system wholly un-British and alien in concept. All apparently for our own benefit, astonishingly supported by both left and right-wing popular paper journalists, Hodges Daily Mail, Kevin Maguire Daily Mirror and others, countered it seems by the lone voice of Neil Oliver on GB News. I have travelled the world, visited every continent and enjoyed freedom pretty much as an Englishman would expect of his birthright. It is disappearing in front of our eyes. A new normal is available to those who succumb to experimental gene therapy, which even the pharmaceutical companies admit they don't comprehend. See the Moderna pre-jab information leaflet. Such is the demise of the British intellect, no risk is too great, it seems, for the annual sunbed in Spain. It is not a good time to be young. Will Her Majesty sign off a vaccine passport totally contradictory to her coronation oath? To govern us according to our laws. Of course she will. As HRH Duke of Edinburgh told me over OG&T in 2011, she signs anything her ministers put in front of her now. Copyright Godfrey Bloom 2021.